Hello and welcome to the Keep or Cup podcast. I'm Chad Young. Pete Ball is here with me as well. We are recording on Sunday the 24th. I'm not even going to tell you what time it is. It's very early in the morning. There are 8 days left in the baseball season because today is just starting and the games haven't been played yet. But we are, you know, here at Keeper Cut, well, we are still invested in some leagues and some of the leagues we're going to talk about today. I'm still fighting for championships. Pete, you're still fighting with me in one of those leagues, right? Are you still in the hunt in the podcast league?
I am. The last time I checked, which was earlier in the week, it was really a fight for second place. You had like a 10 or 11 point lead on everybody. So, I mean, I'd still like to come in second so that it says Keeper Cut Chad, Keeper Cut Pete at the top of the standings. But
that'd be nice.
I don't know what's going on in that one. I go between second and fourth place like four times a day.
Yeah, I'm down to a 9 point lead, which is still in a 5x5 league, should still be plenty. But that league's been weird because I had at one point built up like a 13 point lead, and I thought I was coasting, and then at some point in August, maybe even in September, I fell to second place, like very briefly. Yeah, the last time I was out of first place was September 1st. On August 31st, I fell out of first. I stayed out on the first. I regained it and then fell as low as tied for first again as of, maybe I'm a little behind here, I can't tell, but right around the 8th, I was either tied for first or back into second. And then I retook the lead on the 9th, and since then I've been just extending it. And I think this is a case where, you know, in a 5x5 league, if certain categories are close, you could be at sort of a peak or a valley with small changes, right? And so I think early in September, I was sort of at like my worst case scenario at that point, where like I was very small amounts behind in a bunch of categories where it was like, I can't really go any lower than this. And if anything flips back my way, I'll be fine. And that's sort of what's happened. But we're not going to talk about that league first. We're actually not going to talk about we're not here to talk about the standings anyways. I started to say, well, we are still competing for some titles and still fighting. We are also very much, very much in the heat of keeper season, which seems a little weird because the season is still going on. But we talked about keepers last week in our listener leagues that we're running on Fantrax. In auto new leagues, I think it's almost more pressing because I'm still making decisions about like who to auction based on who I'm keeping, who I'm not keeping, who's a free agent that I think might be worth holding into the offseason, regardless of whether or not I think they're a keeper. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Is we're looking at our auto new leagues. We are in three auto new leagues together. We're going to talk about at least one of them, maybe two of them, maybe three of them, we'll see. But we're going to start with our listener league. And that is Auto New League 1372, the Keeper Cut Listener League. Pete, you said a moment ago that you were, you know, gonna hope to finish second in that podcaster league so that we could be, you know, Keeper Cut Chad first, Keeper Cut Pete second. That's the not opposite gonna happen in the listener league. You've got a pretty decent grasp on last place. I think you've got a shot.
Sweet.
To climb up. You could climb up out of last, I think. I have been actually climbing the last few weeks and have pulled myself all the way up to, what is that, seventh place? Eighth place. All the way up to eighth place. And I have very little shot to get to seventh. So, yeah, we're down near the bottom there, which means we've both been rebuilding, thinking about keepers for a while. I will also warn our listeners, we didn't really spend a lot of time prepping for this episode. And so we sort of decided last minute what we were talking about. And so these keeper decisions, I think what you're going to hear from us here are fairly real time. Us going through our rosters and thinking about like, oh, is this the guy I want to do this with? What do I want to do here? And so that's what we're going to do. And I am also, I've got a watch list set up for this league that I'll talk through some guys who are free agents who I think are worth at least keeping an eye on to see if maybe I want to auction them off at some point in the next week and add them to my roster. But let's start with our keepers. And before, wait. I almost messed this up, Pete. I was going to get into keepers.
We got our numbers. Yeah.
We haven't even talked about, this is episode 117. We have not even talked about jersey number 17. 17, it's like Todd Helton and Keith Hernandez. And Hernandez didn't even wear it his whole career.
It's definitely the Helton or Lance Berkman episode.
Yeah, Berkman's a fun one. Looking down, Mark Grace wore it for 16 years for the Cubs.
Yeah, that's a long time. Shin-Soo Chu, fantasy legend. One of the first like power speed kind of late guys in my early days of playing.
Chu, you know, I'm surprised how low Chu is on this list. Like he only had 34.6 career WAR per Baseball Reference. And that is sort of shocking to me. The guy who wears number 17, who is directly above him, despite having played a few less years, is one Shohei Ohtani. That's a pretty good number 17.
Pretty good one.
Yeah, he's got 34.8 career F4. That number is going to go up before his career is over. I am reasonably confident. And you know, if you look at Helton as sort of the gold standard at 61.8 career WAR among players who wore 17 meaningfully, there's three guys ahead of him on this list, but it's Ken Griffey Jr. wore it for one season, Scott Rolen wore it for six, David Cohn wore it for three. But if you look at guys who are associated with that number, Otani's going to end up as the top all time, I would think. I would think he's going to be around long enough to pass Helton. So, yeah, maybe it's the Otani episode.
Yeah. We'll call it the Ohtani episode. That's the most exciting possible name for it.
I think so. All right. So now that we've determined it's the Ohtani episode, we can get back to the less important business of who we're keeping and who we're cutting in League 1372, the Keeper Cut Listener League. And Pete, do you want to start with your roster or you want me to start with mine?
Sure. I don't mind starting. I do apologize for our listeners. It's been like an inconsistent season for me in terms of my activity. Like I'm looking, I still have Adelis Garcia on the IL. It's just been a hectic summer. I promise you're going to get the more active me next year, but there wasn't, to be fair, a lot to be active about, Chad. This team was a disaster right off the bat. I built my rotation around names like Tristan McKenzie and Max Scherzer and Christian Javier. Like, there's not a lot of worse names you could have invested a lot of your money into.
McKenzie's going to be on the hill today.
I see that. Yeah. So I should get him in there, see if I can get out of last place.
It's sort of hilarious because, like, as a Guardians fan, this weekend, it's been like, it's the second to last weekend of the season, and we've got our rotation set up. So in these two games against the Orioles, you've got Bieber on Saturday, McKenzie on Sunday. They're both lined up to make another start. Like, this is how you would think you would want your rotation set at the end of the season, but instead it's just like, well, they're finally healthy, they can get a couple starts in, get some warm-ups going. Yeah,
hey, it's better to see them than see them not back. See them.
I'm glad to see them back. And we had a conversation about this related to Edwin Diaz recently, where there was some debate about whether or not Diaz was going to come back this year. He's not, but the debate was like, why would you risk injury? Why would you have them throw pitches in meaningless games in September when they're just working their way back? And my thing was, first of all, this is obviously like, it's a team by team, player by player thing. It is up to the Guardians to determine whether this is best or not for McKenzie or Bieber. But I do think there is probably value. Like, you can't replicate a major league game. Yeah, you could throw some rehab assignments. You could go to like some instructs over the winter. You could throw some AAA games before the end of the AAA season. But you can't replicate the experience of throwing in a major league game. And so, like, I'm very happy that these guys are getting a couple starts. Just because I think, like, get some of those questions of, like, what's it going to feel like when I'm back out of the way? Let them go into the offseason in a more normal, like, I ended the season healthy. I threw a couple starts. I can have my perfectly normal offseason and get ready for spring. I think there's some value in that. So I'm glad to see them back. It'll be fun to watch Tristan pitch today. I hope he throws a gem. But yeah, back to your keepers.
Not only from the like realistic point of view, the real baseball point of view, but also for fantasy managers to see those guys in a major league game. Yeah. That's going to be huge for their value heading into 2024.
Sure.
So I mean, I guess we could start with the most obvious move. I don't know if there's a lot to say, but I guess if you're new to Otnu, which it feels like I still am, I, especially in 4x4, when I'm looking at my roster organizer, I scroll down and I am cutting every single relief pitcher from my roster who is going to be a reliever next year. I am obviously not going to cut a $3 Michael King, but yeah, even some guys who like did really well for me this year, like Aroldis Chapman was worth all four of his dollars for the most part, but that is a cut. I am not going to spend any money on my relievers.
Yeah, I think that's true. I have to look at my roster here. I have a couple of leagues where, because I've churned through relievers, I have some $1 relievers that I may actually hold on to at three next year. Sure. But I mean, I'm with you in both from the regards that like, I don't like to hold relievers. There's no reason to do it. But also like looking at your relievers right now, I mean, Garrett Whitlock has been really disappointing this year. You're certainly not keeping him at $9. Chapman has really struggled down the stretch, and even as good as he's been, I just like in 4x4, I'm with you. I don't want a $6 reliever going into the draft.
I'll buy him back for three, and if he goes for more, I just won't have him next year.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah, and then Jason Foley is your, I mean, you got King, who's not a reliever anymore, so we can table him. But then Foley, who's your other reliever right now, like, yeah, he's $1, and he's got, his rates have been really good, but like 53 strikeouts in 66.1 innings, not really what you want out of a reliever. There's nothing wrong in 4x4 with having a guy who limits home runs and keeps his rates in good shape and doesn't get you a ton of strikeouts. But there's a gap between, there's nothing wrong between having him and I have to keep him. Mm-hmm. And with a guy like Foley, part of that is, at least for me, track record, right? It's like this year, the ERA and WHIP are good. Last year, the home run per nine was good too, but the ERA and WHIP were not. And so like guys, you know, 27, going to be 28 in November. It's not like he's some young breakout stud who you're really excited about. It's also not like if he were 27 and had four straight years of sub three ERA, you know, 1.1 ish WHIP and the kinds of home run per nine, the 0.27 home run per nine he's putting up this year, then I'd be like, yeah, I might keep him at $3 despite the lack of strikeouts because he's just so good at everything else. But like Jason Foley could very easily have a, you know, a 3.7 ERA, a 1.3 WHIP next year. And it only would take a couple of home runs for that home run per nine to get ugly too. So like, yeah, I'm with you on that. What about the rest of your pitching staff? You've got some, I'm going to direct you right away to Christian Javier. Because I've got him in another 4x4 league, and I traded for him this offseason. I think I have him at like $7 or something, so I'm cheaper than you do. But like, he looked like he was like going to be an ace for a long time to come, and he's been just bad this year.
Yeah, he's kind of a mystery too. The swinging strike rate the last two seasons was up near 14%. It was 13.8 last year when he was breaking out. It's kind of inexplicably down at 11.4, and he's getting hit hard. He's giving up more home runs. I don't know what his problem has been. Every time it looks like he's bouncing back, he then has another clunker of a start. Most recently, I can't remember who he's facing, but it was another just disappointing outing. He hasn't been going as deep into outings as he was before either, and obviously that's related to performance. At $14, going to be 16. Nobody would touch him in arbitration. I'm fine cutting him at $16. I think when it's a roster that's this bad, I'm just more likely to cut. Like I'd rather spend that $16 elsewhere. I'm not seeing a lot in Javier's game that he's definitely going to bounce back next season. And if he does, that's great. He'll do it most likely on somebody else's roster. I'm not going to go 16 for him.
Yeah, it is hard to figure what's going on with him. Because he was so good last year. He hasn't really shifted his pitch mix very much. Like if you look at last year versus this year, last year he was throwing 61% fastballs, 27% sliders, and then some curves and change. He's throwing 58% fastball, 30% sliders. He's increased his slider usage by 3%, decreased his fastball usage by 3%. That is not some... like, that's not a thing you're looking at like, oh, he's using his slider more. That must be the problem. He'll go back to it. Like, that's not the issue.
I mean, if anything, you would want him to throw more sliders. His slider is right. Disgusting. Like, yeah. that definitely would be a problem. Yeah.
Right. And like I said, it's not, it just hasn't moved very much in terms of usage. It's basically the same. What has changed a little bit is his velocity. And it isn't a big shift. He's down like less than a mile per hour. But if you go to Baseball Savant and look at his pitch distribution chart, they've got some fun stuff on that chart. And one of the things they have on that chart is they show the league average velocity on pitches along with the distribution of velocity for that pitcher. So if you look at 2022 for Christian Javier, he's got a nice little bell curve with his fastball velocity, and the league average is basically right smack in the middle of that bell curve. So he was effectively throwing a league average velocity fastball along with that nasty slider, and you know, half his fastballs were above league average velocity, half were a little below. This year, that slight shift down has moved him to a point where his fastball is now almost always below league average velocity. He's occasionally sneaking up above it, but it's almost always below. And his slider has moved from sort of touching league average velocity at its absolute peak to not getting up to league average velocity ever. And that could be enough to explain some of these issues. And if you start to look at his like ex-woba by pitch, it's gotten a little bit worse on his curve. He doesn't throw his curve that often. It's gotten a little worse, a little better on his changeup, but he doesn't throw his changeup that often. So like maybe those two sort of balance out a bit. His slider has gone from a 175 ex-woba last year to 276 this year. His fastball has gone from a 273 ex-woba to a 352. And that to me looks like the issue. His issue seems to be that he is, because like he's getting more whiffs on the slider than he did last year. He's not getting as many whiffs on the slider as he did last year, but the issue really seems to be that he is just getting punished on his fastball this year. And that may be related to the fewer whiffs on the slider, because if guys are seeing the fastball better, then it's easier to lay off that nasty slider. And that difference may be enough that loss of a mile per hour velocity is allowing guys to see the fastball, recognize the slider, and take the pitches they can't hit and hammer the pitches they can. I don't know, right? I mean, I'm just sort of speculating on that at this point, but that's really the only thing that sort of jumps out at me as an issue. Although now as I'm looking further down at Savant page, he's also getting a lot less break on his slider. And so maybe that's an issue.
Well, when I hear velocity stuff, especially for a guy who passed his previous innings high last season by over 60 innings, if you include the playoffs, which obviously you should, those are all stressful, high stress innings. That's concerning to me. Javier's been someone who's been very fortunate throughout his career for the most part. I don't believe he's ever had Tommy John surgery. I don't remember him sustaining any kind of prolonged injury, and he's definitely been like brought along the right way. He spent time in the bullpen. He's gotten starts here and there, and then he slowly became a full-time starter. But I don't know. I hear that, and that raises concern. Like, nobody likes to listen to anybody pretending to be a doctor on a fantasy baseball podcast. I understand that. I'm not saying he's hurt, but this is something I'm going to take into consideration next year. He took on a lot more innings. His velocity dipped and his performance as a result was poor. You cannot ignore that. And if there's nothing to explain it, maybe there is something wrong.
Yeah. And I think this is a guy who, you know, for keeper decisions, there's not a lot. Well, I guess for keeper decisions, not a lot to look for in the offseason other than maybe a report. Right. Maybe you do get a report that he's been dealing with some elbow discomfort and there's nothing structurally wrong, but he's been able to pitch through it and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's an issue. More likely, I don't think we're going to get anything until he starts throwing in spring training. And that doesn't help you with your keeper decisions. But as you get into draft and auction season, if his velocity, it isn't down just a little less than a mile per hour, it's down a little over a mile per hour from 93.8 last year to 92.7 this year. If that's back up over 93, he was 93.5 the year before that. If he's back up over 93, I'll feel a little better. I do think there's a little concern that, you know, this is the first year he's been a full-time starter. He's had some relief appearances in there every other season. So I don't know if that's factoring into the velocity and stuff, but that's the thing I'm going to be watching in the spring, is just, is he back up to 93, close to 94, or is he still down in the 92s? Let's look at the rest of your pitching staff. Are there any other interesting decisions? I mean, some of these are sort of obvious. You're not going to cut a $1 Tanner Bibee. You're not going to cut an $11 Tyler Glasnow. Gonsolin's probably gone. Hauk probably gone. A $3 Cutter Crawford, $1 right now, $3 next year is maybe sort of interesting.
I mean, I hate to say something like this because it's so anecdotal, but we'll see how he does today, right? Like the bigger the sample I can get on Cutter Crawford, the better. He's a little bit older than you might think. Cutter Crawford is, I want to make sure what I'm saying here is correct, but he's not, he's 27. He'll be 28 to start next year. So he's not as young as folks might think. So I might need to see a little bit more, because I think I could probably just get him back for a buck or two in the auction and be perfectly fine if I don't end up doing that. Otherwise, I think for the most part, these are slam dunks. Like Glasnow at 11, Boz at 5, Keller at 5, Bibee at 1. Those are all keeps. Michael King at $3 is definitely a keep at this point. Yeah. The other two that I think I'm going to actually hold on to is Graham Ashcraft for $1. Ashcraft is pretty good. He wasn't this year, but he should be good at keeping the ball on the ground. He does play in Great American Ballpark, which hurts, but obviously home runs per nine is a part of this. And Luis Severino at 3. I don't want to say he's a cut yet. I want to see where he ends up. I think the Yankees might be done with him. He'll only be $5, and he's a guy who's posted multiple 200 strikeout seasons before, and obviously is a former fantasy ace. So I'm not exactly ready to write Severino off. He looked like he was maybe turning a corner before he sustained the injury. And last, Chad, Tristan McKenzie. I think at this point, I have maybe more interest in keeping McKenzie at $14 than Javier. I don't think I'm going to, but Javier's been bad. McKenzie's just been hurt. So at least McKenzie has a little bit of an excuse.
Are you called Keller at $5 a slam dunk, and he has been quite bad since June. Although I looked, he had a better August. I guess he's been sort of up and down, but
it's much been up and down. He's been like, it's not like a consistently just like meh fantasy starter. It's either been like, oh man, this guy's incredible, or oh god, why was he in my lineups this week? There's not really been a lot of middle ground with Keller.
So, but you think at $7, he's an easy keep for you?
I think with this roster, I don't expect to win a championship next year. Like, it sounds lame to say, because I should have a lot of money to spend, but I'd rather see Keller for another year at $7 than just cut him, because I think he's also, like, the last couple of years been a spring training darling and a preseason hype guy. Like, I kind of expect he would go for more than $7 after performing as he did this year.
Yeah. Let's turn to your offense, and we're going to have some catcher conversations in this league, because I've also got some catcher decisions to make. But you've got, I think, three catchers that you have relatively cheap. You've got a $1 Tyler Soderstrom, whose debut has not been what we would have hoped. You have a $1 Yainer Diaz, who you almost just want to imagine what his season could have been if the Astros would just put him in the lineup and leave him there instead of bouncing him in and out all the time.
Then you have
MJ Melendez, who has you have a $3, and his overall line is not very good, but it is heavily weighed down by a brutal start. He's been, I think, pretty good for a while now. So where are you with those three?
So let me ask you, Chad, with seven games started at catcher, does Melendez have catcher eligibility next year?
You need five starts or 10 appearances in Ottonoo.
Oh, he's got both.
So that'll keep him good to go for next year. I do think the emergence of what is his name, Felix Vermeen, as their backup for Sal Perez might be enough to cost Melendez a shot at being a long-term catcher. I don't think he's made an appearance at catcher since, I'm trying to see, when was his last appearance at the catcher spot? He hasn't made one since April. So he was a catcher on April 30th. That was his 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th, 8th, something like that, start of the season. And that's it. He hasn't come in as a replacement of catcher. He has not played a second of catcher since then. So I think we have to expect that this is the end of the line. He'll have it next year, but not after that. But going back to like July 4th, he's been like a 110 or 115 WRC plus.
Yeah.
And like he's been good enough since then. He's a 112 WRC plus since July 1st or July 4th. I could pick July 1st instead. He would be a 111 WRC plus since July 1st. Point of that is he's been good enough to be an outfielder in fantasy. Right. So I think he becomes an easy keep for next year because he's your starting catcher if you want him to be. He can play every day because he's going to be an everyday outfielder for the Royals. And yeah, he probably won't earn catcher back, but at $5 next year, $7 in 2025, depending on how next season goes, he may be an easy keeper as an outfielder for 2025. So I think your future, if I'm looking at your roster right now, I think Soderstrom I'm probably moving on from just because what's he done. But if you can keep Diaz and Melendez as your catchers, there's a real good chance that going into 2025, Diaz has established himself as your starting catcher and Melendez moves into your outfield, and like that's a good place to be.
Yeah, that's definitely the plan. I mean, there's no chance I don't keep Yenner Diaz. Like, yeah. Even under the hood, it looks good, which is just really weird. He only has a 3% walk rate, which in this format does hurt, right? Obviously that does, but he is so good at everything else. And when you consider just the position, you can easily ignore the 3% walk rate because you're getting something from your catcher, which is just awesome, let alone for $3 next year. So I wouldn't be surprised if Yainer even gets a dollar or two in arbitration just because there's other targets on my team, but $3, $4, he's definitely a keeper.
And I think he does get targeted a little bit. So let's poke around the rest of your infield. So at your corner spots, you've got Jamer Candelario. You've got, you have Kim slotted in as a third baseman right now because you have a bunch of guys who are multi-position eligible. So maybe we aren't going to break this down, but I was going to do corner and middle. But you got Jamer Candelario, who's first and third, and I think we'll keep both of those. You have Jazz Chisholm. He is a second baseman for now, but he will lose second base going into next season. You've got Sedano Rafaela, who has, I think, reestablished himself as both shortstop and outfield for the future and has looked pretty good for your Red Sox. Tommy Edman will be second base, shortstop, and outfield again next year. Ha-Seong Kim will be second, third, and short again next year. Ke'Bryan Hayes, you got at third base. And then you got Brian Rocchio, Marcelo Mayer, a couple prospects, Jackson Merrill. You've got a $13 O'Neill Cruz, who we talked about quite a bit last week when we were talking about your other keeper leagues. You have O'Neill Cruz everywhere, it seems. Those are your middle infielders or your infielders. The one guy we haven't mentioned who actually was the guy having a great year was Wander Franco. We've talked about him before on the show. You might as well wait and see if there's some crazy story that turns out he's completely exonerated and none of this stuff happened, but he's probably a cut. So let's leave him aside, talk about the rest. Anyone in there, maybe just run through them real quick and off the top of your head, you know, you're keeping or cutting them.
Yeah, sure. Jazz at 17 is a slam dunk, in my opinion. You know, I'm a big Jazz guy. Yeah. Even if he's just outfield, I'm keeping him. Ha-Seong Kim he had so much hype when he first came to the Padres. Yeah. And then it was like, oh, he had like a bad season or two, so forget about him. I don't know if he still is, but he was like leading baseball in B-War, which maybe isn't the greatest to go by, but it definitely doesn't matter for fantasy. But no, he's a keeper, especially at $6. O'Neill Cruz, definitely gonna, you know, let him anchor my teams to the bottom of the Atlantic again. Ke'Bryan Hayes is a no-brainer, I think, at $7 with what he's shown. Sedan, I don't think so. He's a glove-first prospect, and something that was a concern about him from scouts as he came up was that his plate discipline was just not going to translate well to the major leagues. And it has 30% strikeout rate. He's walking less than 5% of the time. And I'm not trying to like harshly judge him based on this small sample, but I have to make a decision.
Though. Yeah.
And I don't think he's worth keeping. I think if I really wanted him, I could get him back and probably for less than what he would cost me. So the prospects, I'm going to keep the three of them. I'm not going to keep Brian Rocchio, but I am going to keep Jackson Merrill, Marcelo Meyer, and Roman Anthony. Even though he's not an infielder, I'll throw him in there as well. Just get the prospects out of the way because this team is a long way away from competing, I think. And I want to roll the dice on those three players.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think I might, if I'm you, I'm shopping Rafaela rather than cutting him because he's $3. He'll be $5 next year. He's going to end the season with like a close to, if not over 800 OPS in an on-base plus slugging league, and stellar minor league numbers. And so it sounds like you, and maybe it's gonna be Red Sox fans in general, given what you've heard of him as a prospect coming up. Like, I think you're sort of the low man on him. So I think you'll actually do pretty well trading him this offseason if you don't want to keep him. Other than the fact that we just announced to everyone in the league that's what you're doing. But
I mean, look, he is gonna get play time. The Red Sox had like historically bad defense, worst in the league. He is a dynamite athletic fielder, and so he's gonna have time to figure it out at the plate. I just, $5 is a little too rich for my blood.
Got it. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to your outfield. All right, welcome back. We are going through Pete's Keepers in League 1372. It's a Keeper Cut Listener League. I do want to take a quick moment, quick little break here to tell you there are going to be a couple of teams available in this league. So if you're listening and you're interested in playing in this league with us, go check out League 1372 and Auto New. The two teams at the top of the standings right now, House of Sand and Rough Riders, are likely to be available this offseason. You could take them over as soon as this week, next week. They are both teams that have spent some money to compete this year. And so there's going to be some interesting choices to make this offseason to get back under the cap. But you don't end up at the top of the standings without having some pretty fun pieces. And so go check out those rosters. There's some really interesting names there. We're going to find a couple managers for those teams because they're good teams. Who doesn't want to take over a team that was contending already, right? So... But back to Pete's team and his outfield situation. We've already talked about Chisholm is going to have outfield eligibility. Rafael is going to have outfield eligibility. Edman. We left out when we talked about the catchers, Dalton Varsho. That is because Dalton Varsho will definitely not be a catcher next year. I don't think he played a single inning at catcher this year. The Jays are clearly leaning on his center field glove, which makes sense. But you've got a $15 Varsho, $21 Christian Yelich, $2 Sal Frelick, $1 Josh Lowe, $3 Willier Abreu. You got Nick Prado for $1. You got Oscar Colas for $2. Joey Weimer for $1. Brian De La Cruz for $1. You already talked about Roman Anthony. And then you got Jaron Duran for $2. This is a messy group. There's some interesting names there. I'm not sure there's a ton I'm excited about keeping.
Oh, I actually liked my outfield more than most of my team.
Oh, really?
Team. Well, I think Yelich is at 21 is just going to be a keep. He's definite. Like, he's going to be trade bait for me next season. Adelis Garcia, same thing. I mean, 35 bombs.
Garcia because he's on the. Where do you have Garcia? Here he is. He's at the top of your. He's I see him on your bench now.
Yeah, all right, for only $6, might be one of my best players. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And actually. The outlook that I have on your outfield changes when I'm like, oh yeah, you also have that guy who I missed reading through it. So that does, yeah. Yelich and Garcia are obvious keeps. Obviously, Josh Lowe at $1 is a great piece. It's after that I start to be like, okay.
I really like Willier Abreu, actually. Okay. So I like Duran, but Abreu has done nothing wrong since getting called up. He is just mashed. Everything under the hood looks good. The expected batting average has been .288. It backs up what he's done to this point. He is posting a 10% barrel rate, which for a prospect, inject that into my veins. The walk rate is in the double digits. He's hitting a ton of line drives. The line drive rate is up around 30%. Average EV looks good. It backs up, obviously, what that barrel rate is. Like, everything that you would want Willier Abreu to do, he has done. And the Red Sox definitely need outfield impact bats. They have a bunch of outfielders and they basically all do the same thing. So Abreu, I'm actually pretty excited about. I realize that means that I'm in on Willy or Abreu at $5, but not Sedan Rafaela, and that might be a little weird. But again, one I think is more of a hitter, and the other one is more of a glove first prospect. So he gets me a little excited. Duran, before his injury, like he started to slump a little bit, but for the most part, this was a monster. He needed this. Like this was kind of make or break with his Red Sox tenure here, and he looked awesome. And Sal Frelick, you know, it was a little bit up and down, but I still like the tools, especially in this format with on base. He's not a great player. He's not a player I'm going to build around, but I think he's someone I can hold on to see what they can do at $4. Brian De La Cruz, we'll see. He could be a cut. And then I got Roman Anthony coming up the pipeline. Most of them, though, are cuts. Tommy Edman's going to be a cut. Oscar Colas was freaking horrible this year. He's a cut.
Yeah.
Not really interested in Joey Weimer. Nick Prado, I'm probably going to cut as well. And definitely, like you said, Dalton Varsho. So,
yeah. And it's your outfield. I mean, your outfield outlook for next year is
Jazz. Jazz is an outfielder.
Jazz, that's right. But it is oddly dependent, I think, on what the Red Sox end up doing. Because right now, the Red Sox, I mean, I guess Yoshida is going to be a DH. They still got Verdugo. But if at some point next year their starting outfield is Abreu, Duran, and Anthony, and those guys are playing more often than not, your outfield all of a sudden could be real deep. But if those guys are, you know, if you have those three plus Yoshida playing some, plus Verdugo, plus Rafaela getting time out there, like you end up in a situation where all of those guys are in a timeshare. It'll be sort of interesting to see just sort of what Boston does with that outfield next year and this offseason, because if they go out and sign anybody, which I assume will, who can either DH or be at first base or something like that, right? First base and third base are where they're strongest right now. But if they go out in the offseason and sign somebody to help out there or to DH at all, and it pushes Yoshida back to the outfield full time, like they could just end up with a very crowded outfield situation. And it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out.
I think Verdugo is on his way out. I know I've said that before. Yeah. Apparently they were heavily listening on him. Even with the Yankees, there was a report that they were thinking about trading Alex Verdugo for Clark Schmidt. So at least that part of this cluster should be dislodged. But you're right. There is a little bit of a brewing issue there with like not great talent.
Well, it's all really interesting talent. So it'll be curious to see what happens. Right. But you're right. This isn't a case where you're like, they have two established outfield all-stars and like three more like possible all-stars coming up. And like, how do you make room for all these guys? It's more, sometimes you have teams that you're like, how do you make room for all this talent? And sometimes you have teams that you're like, who from this talent's actually going to emerge? And I think that's the question the Red Sox are answering right now, is like, we probably have a really good outfield here. We just don't know who it is or what it's going to look like. So let's turn our attention to my team, which is the Saint Anne Steamers. Like Pete, my relievers, I've got, you know, a $2 Brusdar Graterol. As good as he's been, the low strikeouts are a little concerning for me. I may think about him. I talked about with your Jason Foley, this question of like, boy, if Foley were more established and you felt like he is for sure going to give me these kinds of rates every year, Graterol is getting closer to that for me, less because he's more established and more because of the prospect pedigree that existed with him. And so I'm intrigued by him, but he's probably still a cut. Garrett Clevenger is gone. My other relievers have been bouncing back and forth from the rotation and the pen, but like I'm probably not keeping Jordan Hicks even at a dollar, although if he were set up as a full-time reliever, maybe. I don't want him as a starter because he wasn't very good. And then I've had, like, you know, we'll get into some of the other guys when I talk about my starting pitching. But I think those guys are all generally pretty easy cuts. Again, Graterol, the one guy I might think about, but the strikeouts in Graterol have been so lacking. So he's probably gone.
Yeah, he's just not a strikeout pitcher. And at $4, I think he's definitely a cut. Like, I think you make an interesting point with Jordan Hicks. You look at the home runs per nine this year, like 0.57. It's pretty awesome. And he's going to be depended on. But so I would understand, but I think he's the type of guy who, you know what, I'll throw him up for auction late. If I can get him for a dollar, great. If someone else gets him, I'll find another reliever that strikes everybody out and, you know, be fine.
Yeah. So turning our attention to my starting pitchers. I've got a group here that I'm sort of excited about, but I'm not really sure what it all looks like. Logan Webb at $24 is an ace who I'm going to continue to use as an ace. I'm very happy with him. Logan Gilbert at $15 isn't quite as good as Webb, but he's not that far off. He's closer than you might think. The strikeouts are better. He actually has three fewer strikeouts, but has also thrown 23 fewer innings. The home runs per nine aren't as good. The ERA is not quite as good. The whip is very similar. So Gilbert, $15, pretty easy. Taj Bradley, $3, has not been what I hoped he would be so far this year. I am not cutting a $3 Taj Bradley. The talent is too good. He's shown flashes of it. He's sticking around. Josiah Gray at $3 is going to be, this will be $5 next year, is going to be a really tough choice for me. And actually, let's go through a couple. Let me come back to Gray in a moment. $2 will be $4 next year. I have Kyle Bradish. He is an obvious keep. He has been just stellar this year. Braxton Garrett, $2 will be $4 next year, has been, you know, 3% less stellar than Bradish. He is also sticking around. And then you get in. Then I've got some prospects who I think are pretty easy keeps. Jacob Mizorowski, I think is how you pronounce it, for Milwaukee at $1. Cade Horton for the Cubs at $2 is like, there is no question that I am keeping Cade Horton for $2. Maybe my favorite pitching prospect in baseball right now. Certainly.
How high did you go on him? I was the one that nominated him recently. So
in the bidding?
Yeah.
So I, with the caveat that I have $45 in free cap space in this league, and so my bids are just like, I'm just bidding whatever I want on guys right now.
Right.
I bid $8 on Horton.
Okay, I never would have got him then.
Had somebody bid $7 and I had to pay him $8, he might not have been a keeper for me. As much as I like him, I just, an $8 pitching prospect is a lot.
Yeah, way too
However,
much.
Yeah, in this particular circumstance, I would rather have him for $8 than have somebody else have him for like $5.
Sure.
And so I was like, I'll do it. We'll see what happens. But yeah, that's where I am with him. So the rest of my pitching to try to move through the interesting choices here. Josiah Gray has been like hot and cold. I have him in League 13, which is our head-to-head league that you and I are both in. And he has been glued to my bench through the playoffs. I do not trust him, but he's been pitching decently well. He's going to end the season. Like, he is one good start away from ending the season with a sub-4 ERA. The whip is pretty ugly. The home run per nine is only okay. The strikeouts are only okay. But like, this is a super talented pitcher who's sort of putting it together and is still just 25 years old. I think I'm probably going to keep him at $5 because I think there could be a lot of hype on him in the offseason. The talent is legit. And so I think I want to keep him and see what he can do.
He made absolutely monstrous strides this year because brought him up. I was the one that had him last year and cut him, and I'm still fine with that decision. But
yeah.
His home runs per nine, his first 2 years in the league, well, with the Nationals in 2021 after the trade was 2.15. Last year it was 2.30, and I was like, there's no way I'm keeping this guy. So to have it at 1.24 where it's at right now, that may not jump off the page. That's huge for him. That's a monstrous stride that he took this year.
Yeah, and that's the thing with him is like, if he repeats this year, next year, as a $5 guy, I'll start him occasionally. He'll get good matchups. Like I'll use him and he will be useful for me at that price. And I will be okay with that. But the real reason to keep him is another off season of strides like that. And he could establish himself as a guy who's in my rotation for years to come. And so that's what I'm really hoping for from him. That is sort of a similar spot to where I am with Brian Wu. I have a $3 Brian Wu. I do think there's some, it's unclear to me what his role is going to be with the Mariners next year, just because they have a lot of arms. And so I'm curious to see how they're going to use him, but assuming he's in the rotation, like I think I want a $5 Brian Wu. He only threw 80 pitches this year in the majors. He threw another 44 in the minors. So like innings might be a little bit of an issue next year. That is like that 124 4.2 innings. Last year, he threw, 57 innings. So it's a huge jump for him year over year. So, you know, he's not going to be a 200-inning guy next year. Maybe if I'm lucky, he gets to 150. I think he's a guy who could be in and out of the rotation, depending on who's healthy and what's going on in Seattle. But I think at $5 for a guy who turns 24, just before spring training, basically, with a sub-4 ERA, a sub-1.2 whip, a home run per nine of almost exactly one, more strikeouts than innings pitched. Like, what's not to like there?
Right.
He is a harder sell. He hasn't thrown because he isn't throwing a ton of innings. He's a harder sell in like quality starts or wins leagues, but I don't care about either of those things here. So he's a keep for me. Ken Waldichuk was so bad to start the year. We don't need to talk about him a ton because we talked about him last week, but he's been way better lately. He had another good start just a couple days ago on Friday. It was against Detroit. Yeah. It was against Detroit and it was in Oakland. I get that that's about as easy as it gets, but still, 6 innings, 7 strikeouts, no walks, 2 runs on 4 hits. Like, those are the kinds of starts he's, you know, we talked about like, oh, are the K's going to show up when we talked about him last week? They at least for one start here did. I think I have seen enough for him to keep him at $4. I'm not as excited about him as I am about like Gray and the strides he's made, but Waldichuk, his second half's been much better. And I think I'll probably hold on to him there. Javier Assad at $4.
He killed me yesterday. I had him like a very tight matchup. He's supposed to be starting today. He surprisingly came in as a reliever and dominated.
I know. He was so good.
That killed me.
It happened to me in a number of leagues too. I didn't have him in my lineups. Got him. I mean, but the thing, his last 2 outings, right? Now they're home starts against Colorado and Pittsburgh. I'm cutting it off there because the start before that was at Colorado, and I just don't care what he did at Colorado. But against Colorado and Pittsburgh at home, 9 innings, 14 strikeouts, 1 walk and a hit by pitch, 1 run on 7 hits. That 1 run came on a solo home run. Now, the start before that, again, you know, we skipped the one at Colorado. The start before that against Arizona, 5 1/3 innings, 3 runs on 7 hits and 1 walk is great. He didn't get a single strikeout in that start against Arizona. Then the start before that, he faced Cincinnati. He struck out 7, walked 1, gave up no runs on 7 hits in 8 innings. It's like the Arizona start is weird. The Colorado start is whatever. But he's been good. He's been good since moving to the rotation. So it's like
he's been fine. I don't know. He doesn't strike anybody out. He didn't throw out the minors. $6 is just too pricey for my blood.
You think so?
Yeah, man. Six. Like, do you really think he's going to go for more than that at auction?
I don't know. I don't know. Because, like, I mean, since he moved to the rotation, he just made a relief appearance. But since he moved to the rotation, his last 9 appearances, including that relief appearance, yeah, the strikeouts are not great, 7.41 per nine. He's got a 2.63 ERA over that stretch. The FIP and XFIP are 4.27, so they're not as good, clearly. But I don't know. He keeps the ball on the ground. I kind of think people are going to be high on him going into next year. So I have a tough choice to make on him. I will agree with that.
So I'd throw out something to consider that Josiah Gray, Logan Gilbert, and Logan Webb are already 3 guys who are not really strikeout pitchers. And add Assad in there for $6 too. I don't know. I'd rather get some K upside and Woo if we want to tack on another one.
But when Taj Bradley strikes out 400 hitters in 200 innings next year, it'll be fine. I won't need a strikeout from anyone else.
With 300 home runs given up.
Maybe. So then my other pitchers that I've got, we'll move these kind of quickly. AJ Smith-Shawver, I get it. The minor league numbers have been great. I kind of like him, but I don't think I'm going to keep him at $5. I just don't think he's that good a prospect. And that's another team where like they have so much pitching in Atlanta that I have no faith that he's going to be regular in the rotation. So I'm probably going to move on from him. I already said Mizorowski and Horton I'm keeping. And the other 2 guys are both guys I only have these guys on my roster because they're on the 60-day IL. Tyler Molly I will not be keeping. Trevor Rogers, I might think about. I'm waiting for reports on, is he healthy? What are their plans for him? Stuff like that. But like, you know, he only threw 18 innings this year, but after what, how bad last year was, 18 innings with 19 strikeouts, one home run per nine, an ERA of exactly four, 1.22 whip. Like that's progress. And it's some signs of like at $3, he'll be five next year. It's a little bit like Josiah Gray, where it's like, if I get a decent number of innings out of him repeating what he's been doing, I'll be fine with it. But there's a chance that he could be a lot more. And so I'm probably going to hold on to Rogers, but
Rogers is definitely interesting to me at $5. I think I would, especially when you consider the strikeout upside that he has and the fact that you might be lagging a little bit behind in strikeouts going into the auction. I think he's a risk I'd rather take than a $6 Assad, especially when you consider like there's going to be opportunity in Miami. I am a little bit worried about the Sandy Alcantara situation. I don't know if you saw that shut down again with forearm tightness. And this is a player who routinely throws 100 miles an hour for 220 innings. Like,
right.
I don't know. One could say they maybe saw this coming. So there might be opportunity for Rogers to get another crack at that rotation and actually stick. And they were dangling Edward Cabrera in trades both at the deadline and before the season as well. So I think there will be opportunity, and I really like the talent.
I agree. I totally agree. So I think he's probably going to stick around, but we will see. So let's take one more quick break, and then we'll look at my offense when we get back. All right, welcome back. We're looking through League 1372. We mentioned we might look at some other leagues. We're not going to do that. We're going pretty deep in this one, so we'll stick to this league. But we've gone through Pete's team. We've gone through my pitching in League 1372. My team is the St. Ann Steamers. Got to look at my offense. And Pete, when we talked about your catchers, I said we're going to have some catcher conversations here because I've also got a catcher situation brewing. Here are the guys on my roster who are and will be catcher eligible into the future. I have a $14 Wilson Contreras who started the season quite poorly and has again established himself as good an offensive catcher as there is in the game. I have a $2 Ethan Salas who's only in double A, but is like, I think he's like 12 years old or something. Salas is like the youngest player.
He just turned 13.
He just turned 13. Happy birthday. Ethan, if you like me are Jewish, congratulations on your bar mitzvah. Probably aren't, but you know, never know. But Salas, he's actually, what is he, 17, I think. But regardless,
I think so.
as a catcher to be in double A at 17 and like playing well, like his offense is a little weak, but by all accounts, his defense has been very good. I'm super in on his future. We'll have to talk about how I feel about prospects in general, but I've got him, and then I've got a $3 Logan Ohapi and a $1 Bo Naylor. Naylor and Ohapi both have really good slugging for catchers. Naylor also has a good on base. I'm going to be straight up. I've been saying this for a long time. I think Bo Naylor is going to be a star. I think on this show at some point last year, I made a comment about Bo Naylor as like among this class of catchers coming up. If you told me there was an heir to JT Realmuto, it was him. He's only stolen five bases this year, but he hasn't been caught. He has, in 63 games and 217 plate appearances, Naylor has 9 home runs, 5 stolen bases, and good rates sort of across the board, except for averages. His 237 average is not very good. However, he also got off to a slow start. I'm going into all this depth on him because I really like Bo Naylor. And if you sort of skip ahead to like July-ish. So let's do the same July 1st cutoff, although it'd be better if I could go a couple days later because he started off July ice cold. But I said, actually, let's do this. So we're going to go to June 28th. And the reason we're going to go to June 28th is I mentioned he has 9 home runs in the year. He, since June 28th, when he hit his first home run in the year, in 191 plate appearances, has all 9 of his home runs, 5 of his stolen bases. He has a 253 average, 361 on base, 494 slugging. He has a 281 BABIP in that stretch. It ain't the BABIP that's driving his season. He's walking 14.1% of the time, striking out 20.9% of the time. Like, Bo Naylor, he has a 136 WRC plus since June 28th. He looks like an elite bat playing catcher. And so we'll start with this. I'm going to keep Bo Naylor for $3 next year. I have no issues with that. And I think the challenge for me right now is I really believe in Logan Ohapi's bat. He'll be $5 for me next year, but the OBP has been ugly. The power's been there, but the OBP has been bad. He has a 269 OBP. Some of that is a 219 BABIP. Some of it is only walking 5.3% of the time, but really out of a catcher with power, 5.3% walk and 25.1% strikeouts, if you assume the BABIP will correct at some level, I think he's going to be a pretty useful catcher, which gets me to thinking that for $8, I can keep Ohapi and Naylor and have my catcher tandem. And then you get into an interesting debate of like, I think I therefore am going to trade Wilson Contreras because he'll be $16 next year. He is easily worth $16. He should be an easy keep in my opinion, but I don't need to keep all three of those guys. I just don't need three catchers. And then I get into a debate of, do I also shop Salas this offseason because I don't need three long-term catchers, right? Naylor is 23. Ohapi is 23. Salas might end up being the best of them, but I don't really have a great desire to wait on him just to 2 years from now be like, maybe late next year. Maybe that's a more accurate timeline. Maybe it's late next year. But late next year, he gets called up and I'm like, yeah, but I've already got Ohapi and Naylor. So like, I think I'm probably going to shop Contreras and Salas this offseason. I think that's my plan. Yeah, with pitchers.
I was going to pretty much suggest the same plan. I really like Naylor and Ohapi. And I think obviously at the cost you have them at, that's my plan. And that immediately makes Contreras expendable. I've had a hard time even with like decently valued catchers trading them. But if you can find a taker, I think that'd be a great move. Either way, even if you don't find a taker, I'm not keeping him at 16, especially with Ohapi and Naylor. I think he'd just be a cut. Ethan Salas, even if I don't find a taker this offseason, he has drawn so much hype. Yeah. I'd have a hard time cutting him. I would make it my priority to trade him. Like, it would 100% be my priority to trade him. But even if I don't find someone this offseason, I'm going to trade him during the season next year. There's no way
I'm totally with you on both those guys. Like, Contreras, if my plan ends up being cut Contreras, let someone pay 16 to 18 to 20 for him at auction, which is, I think, what he would go for, like, fine, I'll let someone do that. But Salas, I'm with you for. At that point, it's less the roster spots. It comes down to the cost, right? I just don't want $16 tied up. And the reality is I would end up starting Contreras over Ohapi and probably over Naylor and fine. Like, it'd be good to have, but I just don't need to spend $16 on that. Salas at $2. I'd rather have him. Look around the rest of my infield. We're going to have a Naylor family infield because I have a $4 Josh Naylor and I don't care that he's losing outfield eligibility and will be first base only when he's $4. He missed a bunch of time this year. He's been on a nearly 30 home run pace with a 341 OBP that's about right. About a nearly 30 home run pace, a little less, with a 354 OBP and a 497 slugging. He has, since they traded Ahmed Rosario and stopped locking him into the second spot of the lineup, Naylor's moved up from fourth to third, with Jose Ramirez moving up from third to second. Assuming he's locked into that spot, it's only going to help him with runs and plate appearances and stuff like that. So very happy with Naylor. Andrés Giménez at $6. I'm going to have to look a little bit because he's been really great lately and he was so good last year. And I probably will hold on to him. He will be second base only next year, which hurts a little bit, but fine. Zach Geloff, he's $1. I'm going to keep him. I picked him up for $1, not because I was like, this guy's the future. I was just like, he looks good, I'll pick him up. And now I'm like, oh, right. He just keeps hitting. He will also be second base only next year. So we're getting into a conversation sort of like my catchers here. Spencer Steer, I was super excited because he did enough to keep middle infield eligibility. That's great. He's been awesome. 22 home runs, 359 on base, 459 slugging. he's going to lose shortstop eligibility. So we are now on to three guys who only have second base eligibility at middle infield. Steer also will have first, third, and outfield, so I have some flexibility to move him around. He is an easy keep for me. Nolan Arenado at $19.
I'd keep.
I'm probably keeping because he's Nolan Arenado, but he really hasn't been himself this year.
It was a really, really, really slow start for Arenado.
That's true. That is for sure true. Nolan Schanuel at first base. We've talked about him a little bit in the past. Like, I just don't know where the power comes from, but the on-base percentage is so good. But yeah, I think he's probably gone just because I just don't see the power showing up. Christian Encarnacion Strand is probably my starting third. Oh, no, he's not. He's first base only next year. So now we get into a debate. I've got Naylor. I've got Encarnacion Strand. I will have room, obviously, for a utility player. So, you know, one I'm of those guys both. Slot in there. But I'm keeping both of those guys. It's one of those, like, they will be $10 combined. That's fine. Is O'Hearn keeping outfield eligibility? Yes, we'll talk about him later. After that, it's not almost all prospects. I still got some other guys here. So Willy Adames at $21, as good as the second half has been, I think he's probably gone, with the caveat that I don't have a lot of options at shortstop because all of my guys are losing shortstop eligibility. Jonathan India at $13, I'm probably going to move on from, because if he's not in Great American Ballpark, and it sounds like he won't be, I'm just not that interested in him. And then I've got Royce Lewis, who is going to be third base only. He's an obvious keep at $5. He's $3 now. He'll be $5. Now you get into my mess, which is I have a bunch of second basemen. And other than Adames, who I'm probably going to cut, my shortstop eligible players next year will be Jordan Lawler, who I'm going to keep at $3, but we'll have to see what he does because he hasn't really been good in his debut. And Adel Amador, who's still only in Double A, I'm going to keep him at $3 next year because I'm high on him, but he's not going to help me next season, I don't think. Maybe Brooks Lee, who should be ready at some point next year, but again, we haven't seen him in the majors yet. Lee, I have at $3. I'm probably keeping him at $5. I've got a bunch of guys I like there, but I'm gonna need to go out and buy a shortstop like that or trade for a shortstop. I need a starting shortstop.
You're not sold that you can roll into next year with Jordan Lawler as your starting shortstop. Cause if I was in your situation, I'd totally feel fine with that. I'm not saying I wouldn't go and get a backup, but I don't think I'd buy a starter. I think I'd buy someone I can plug in just in case Lawler's a disaster.
Oh, I think I want a starter. So here's my thing, and this is something that I learned a couple years ago, and I think I probably talked about the show. I certainly wrote it up at some point, but I have found in the past that my worst seasons come when I look at guys I think will be great and assume they'll be great, and that where I do my best is the years where I'm like, I think Jordan Lawler could be a star. I think Brooks Lee could be a star. I've got really good options at shortstop. I think if Amador gets the call next year, he could be excellent for me. None of those guys are proven, right? Lawler would not be the best prospect to have busted if he busts, right? I don't think that's going to happen, but it certainly could. And so from that perspective, like, no, I don't want to go in relying on those guys. What I would like to do, and I can't really do it in this league, I probably can't do it in any leagues because I'm saying this right now, what I would like to do is have everybody else in the league convinced that I'm convinced that I can go into the season with Lawler as my starter. Right? That's what I really want, is for people to think Chad doesn't need a shortstop. So when I start asking about shortstops and trying to make trades, that I'm coming from a position of strength. But no, I won't feel good. It doesn't mean he won't be my opening day starter. But if I go into next season, let's look at my middle infield overall. My middle infield overall is Jimenez, Geloff, Steer, Lawler, and is that it? Are those my only four? Jimenez, Geloff, Steer, Lawler. I think those are my only four major league. Like, Brooks Lee might be up, Amador might be up. But like, those are my four major league guys. Those four guys are not a middle infield I am comfortable with. Sure. I need to go out and get one and maybe even two. I probably need a legit full-time starter and a guy I'm comfortable with as a starter. And then we'll see who's in my lineup on opening day. And Lawler might be in the lineup on opening day, but I don't want to be reliant on those four. If you told me that a year from now, I was like, yeah, I have those guys locked up for like $25 total, and they are my future at middle infield for all eternity, I'd be thrilled, and I believe that that is possible. But I don't want to, I'm not counting on that.
Yeah, I hear that. I was looking at more just like, it's almost like that fantasy football argument, right? Like, no matter how you do, you're going to have a hole somewhere. And if my hole is shortstop in my head, but it is plugged with Jordan Lawler, I can live with that.
Yeah.
I totally understand needing a backup. I'm not going to spend big money on a shortstop if my current starter is Jordan Lawler.
Yeah. And I am probably, we missed one other infielder. We'll have to come back in a minute. I am probably going to have to also spend in the outfield, and we'll talk about my outfield in a moment. But quick backtrack to my infield, because there's one other guy, well, two other guys, actually, I should have mentioned. I have Coby Mayo in the minors for $1. I don't know why he isn't up yet. He should be up soon. I am hoping he's up by the start of next season. Very excited about him. He doesn't change my plans for anyone else, because I'm not like, you know, third base is going to be Royce Lewis and Nolan Arenado next year. Those are my two guys there. But like, that doesn't stop me from keeping Mayo at $2. I have a $13 Rhys Hoskins, who I've obviously had stashed the entire season. And I'm not entirely sure what to do with him, because if I have Christian Encarnacion Strand and Naylor for $10 total at first base, I really like Hoskins. I'm not sure he's enough better than those guys that I need to keep all three of them.
I don't know. I think I'm going to be really tempted to keep Rhys Hoskins at $15.
It's almost like the Contreras situation for me, right? I want a $15 Rhys Hoskins. I am happy to keep a $15 Rhys Hoskins. I'm just not sure that I want to have $15 Hoskins and CES at $2 and Naylor at $4 and Arenado at $21 and Royce Lewis at five. Because that's five guys that I can play three of. And if I'm going to move on from some of those guys, maybe I decide to trade Naylor or Encarnacion Strand. But I think I need to do something about, I don't know. I'm a little torn on Hoskins. And I think like part of it is like, it's almost like Arenado and Hoskins, like they're the two expensive ones. And if I'm going to keep one of those two, Arenado is both a third baseman, which I have more need for, and the more established player, although he's also the older player and he's got back issues. And I don't know. So I've got some decisions to make at Hoskins. I think I'm
looking at that situation differently, because I just never get that excited about catchers. So like Wilson Contreras for $16, like I get that he could be worth that. I totally appreciate that. He's worth that this season, to be fair. I would never spend that. But to have a bunch of position players other than catcher who are at bar, like every player you named is at a good price. Like I think a situation like that is just going to figure itself out. I had the same issue. I had Freeman, Cassis, who I was really high on, and Pasquantino, who I was really high on. And I kept all three. And of course, that situation figured itself out. I think that would definitely, especially when you involve more names, it's just more likely to figure itself out.
Yeah. I also think, for what it's worth, I just talked about at middle infield that I don't like to just assume production from guys who haven't shown it yet. And while I am comfortable assuming some amount of production from Arenado, and I am comfortable assuming production from Josh Naylor, because he has been doing it for a couple of years now, it is, if I'm applying the same logic to my corner infield spots, Royce Lewis has been injured constantly, and Encarnacion Strand is really picking it up lately. But like his overall line for this year in 214 plate appearances of 10 home runs, 332 on base, and 465 slugging is not actually that good for a first baseman in this league. He's more projection than he is production at this point. So I guess from that perspective, and certainly Mayo falls in that camp too. So if I'm applying that same logic, you're right. I should probably hold Hoskins and Arenado and just let the chips fall where they may.
And you've got time to see how he's looking. Like, we do have time here.
Yes. So let's look at my outfield. And this is my outfield is like I need to go pick up a stud outfielder to anchor this group.
You did.
I'm very excited.
You added Evan Carter. So that, like, box checked. We're done here. Like, the stud
that,
is
that
there.
Actually is where I was getting at. This is the future of my outfield here. Is I have an $8 Riley Green, who I really like. I have a $7 Lars Nootbaar, who's been terrific, especially in on-base leagues. I wish the power would show up more, but at $9, like, this isn't a Nolan Chanuel situation where he's, like, great on base and no power. He's just great on base and not as much power as I would like, so fine. Cary Carpenter is, like, I feel like people have missed that Cary Carpenter has become sort of a star outfielder. Like, yeah. He's going to end up, he is, so far, we've got a week left of the season, 433 plate appearances because he's not very good against lefties. Fine, got to platoon him. In roughly two-thirds of a season, 20 home runs, 346 on base, 492 slugging. Yeah, I'm very happy with him at $4 next year. I do have that $1 Evan Carter. By this time next year, you're right. I could be very happy with, like, he is the $50 outfielder I have anchoring my outfield. He's just only costing me three, although he's going to get hit in arb, so we'll see what he costs. But then I've got a $1 Ryan O'Hearn, who I keep thinking he's an obvious cut, but he's been so good this year that I think I probably just keep rolling with him for $3 next year. And now you get into my minor leagues, and I'm like, oh, I got a couple other guys. Sorry. The other outfielder I have in the majors is Ian Happ. Ian Happ has been, what I said about Lars Nootbaar is all true about Ian Happ this year. The on-base percentage is good. The power's been decent. And he's scoring a ton of runs. He is $15 and will be $17, whereas Nootbaar is $7 and will be $9. And so I'm a little bit more reluctant to keep Happ, although I think the price is good on him. So he's another guy, maybe he's more like a Contreras situation where I'll probably end up shopping him a bit. But if I shop him, this is the thing. I want to shop Contreras because I don't want another catcher like that. I want to shop Happ in part because I want to make sure I have room for my kids and can go out and buy a stud outfielder to anchor that group. And Happ just sort of falls in between. Because in addition to the young outfielders I already talked about, I have a $5 Wyatt Lankford, who
he's a keep.
He could be up this week, right? Yeah, I mean, the Rangers are saying they could call him up. And he is making an absolute mockery of minor league baseball. I mean, like, he started off in the complex league. He got 14 plate appearances and he dominated. Fine. That was expected. Goes to high A, gets 106 plate appearances, a 453 OBP, 644 slugging. Then he goes to double A. And they're like, all right, you know, he is 21 years old, so college kid, we'll move him up to double A. He gets 54 plate appearances in double A. In 54 plate appearances, he hits 4 home runs, right? So that is a 40 home run pace, something like that, right? More than that, actually, over a full season, with a 519 on base and a 762 slugging. So they're like, all right, we'll give you a shot at AAA. Now, it's only been 26 plate appearances at AAA. He hasn't hit a home run yet. He has a 538 OBP in AAA right now. The guy he looks like an absolute star. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. I have him in three different leagues at $5, $5, and $7. I'm just ecstatic. The Rangers have hinted that he could be up this year, maybe for the playoffs, assuming they get there. And I think he's going to be one of my starting outfielders on opening day next year. That's what I think. Him and Evan Carter. I'm going to become a Rangers fan. And then I've chased the water.
I would just add, like, when you think the last few years about, because if you're like, man, $7, $5, whatever it ends up being for a player who has not reached the major leagues yet, I know it'll be what, $5, right? He's not going to get.
Well, he'll go up to six if he doesn't get promoted.
Right.
If he gets promoted in the next few days, he could go up to $7. The reality is with Lankford, and we've talked about this with a handful of my other guys, Lankford's going to get hit in arbitration.
Sure.
Whether or not he gets called up, he's going to get hit in arbitration. And so I don't know what he's going to cost. I'm literally not sure I care.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because let's say he does get called up. So there's $2 and he gets $3 in arbitration. Now all of a sudden he's $10. Think about the draft cost the last few years of Anthony Volpe, of Jordan Walker.
Jordan Walker.
Julio Rodriguez. Like, it's just been, it doesn't matter if they reach the major leagues or not. These guys who are tearing it up at the AAA level or even at AA and it looks like they're going to get promoted, they still go for wicked expensive. So it's still a bargain.
Yep. So that's the thing. I think he's in there. Then I have Chase DeLauder and Drew Gilbert at $3 and $2. I really like both those prospects. I think what I do with them will depend a little bit on what those teams do this offseason and where I think the opportunity lies for them. Because I think if it looks like Gilbert has a path to being a Mets outfielder by sometime early-ish next year, and both, by the way, DeLauder and Gilbert are both in AA. They've got to, like, they may have another step to take. But like the Guardians in particular have started to show more and more that they view AAA as a holding pen for guys who are ready rather than a level you need to conquer. And DeLauder's looked good in limited plate appearances at AA. I think he probably starts next year at AA as well. But I think DeLauder's going to be up for Cleveland at some point next year. And Gilbert is crushing AA with the Mets. And I think he'll be up for the Mets at some point next year. And so at, you know, $3 for Gilbert next year, $4 for DeLauder, I think I'm probably going to keep them. I have to start piecing together what my depth chart looks like for next year and make sure I have room for the guys I need to add. The challenge I'm running into is I have a lot of guys I like. I have a lot of guys I want to keep, but my rotation is going to need work. I'm going to need to build out a full bullpen, and I need a couple of sort of anchor bats like we talked about. And so my decision on a guy like DeLauder or Gilbert may come down to not, do I think they're worth their price? Because I do. It may come down to, do I have the roster spots I need to do the things I need to do in the auction or not? But yeah, that's, I'm going to have to probably trade some prospects in general. I probably can't go into the season with
Ethan Salas, man. That's a layup.
But Salas, Amador, him, Lee, yeah. Langford, DeLauder, Gilbert, it's too many of those guys.
I think there's a lot of names there that you wouldn't be able to get anything for. Like, I don't know who's going to trade for a $3 DeLauder.
That could be
if
true.
If he pans out, like, great, but I don't know who would trade for that. Ethan Salas is so much hype, and for $2, I think you could get something there.
Salas, I think that's true. I think the thing with DeLauder and Gilbert, for that matter, it's like Chase DeLauder has had injury issues and it's kept down his prospect rankings. Eric Cross, and that I've cited Eric Cross's September top 500 or whatever it is multiple times recently. I'm going to cite it again. He has DeLauder in his top 40, I think. Yeah, he has Gilbert 35th and DeLauder 37th. I think that by the time we get to like the height of auto new trade season in January leading up to the trade deadline, I think DeLauder is going to be a consensus top 30 prospect. And I think the hype will show up as a result. So we'll see. I also like, I'm a big DeLauder fan. I'm higher than him than most. And so I'm probably more inclined to keep him than Gilbert, even though I think Gilbert will probably be ranked higher and will be a dollar cheaper. So we'll see. But I'll be shopping prospects in this league for sure this offseason, and we'll see how things shake out. So I think we are at time. Pete, I know you are headed to Fenway, right?
Yeah.
This is like the funny thing. We're scheduling this podcast, and we're like, oh, we got to figure out when we can fit it in. And Pete's like, I could do Sunday morning, but I got to be done in time to go to the Red Sox game. And he says it with this like disgust in his voice. And I'm like, you're a Red Sox fan who like loves baseball, and you're just experience is just not your jam, huh?
I guess the quick take is the tickets were a gift and I'm very appreciative and I'm excited to go. Like, absolutely. I'm going with a buddy of mine. He just bought a new house. I'm going to see the house after. Like, it should be a nice day. But
that's awesome.
They're such a depressing team. It's raining out. Fenway is incredibly uncomfortable. Like, look, everybody can hype up Fenway. Really nice. It's my home team's ballpark. Love it. That's great. But like, it is so uncomfortable in there. And I'm just like, I'm 6'1". That's not like a giant person, but it's big enough that it's not comfortable to sit at Fenway. And especially when it's raining, especially when it's against the White Sox. So like, there's just not a lot happening here. It should be a good time. I'm looking forward to it.
You get to scout your boy Cutter Crawford.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, hopefully he doesn't like give up nine earned runs in front of me. I have a very negative experience at Fenway one time. Standing room only. I don't know if I told you this. Standing room only at Fenway Park in September, my freshman year of college. It had to have been, 40 degrees. And we had standing room only on the Green Monster. So it's super windy up there.
Yeah.
I was a college kid, so of course I didn't bring appropriate clothing. I had to go buy a sweatshirt. The sweatshirt was $75, which for the year 2010, that's pretty expensive. Yeah. And Daisuke, I think he honestly gave up either 9 or 10 earned runs in the first inning. And that was it. I decided, you know what? I think I'm going to leave this game. So now, you know, the live game experience can go either way.
Fair enough. It's funny because like I have memories of games I've been to against the Red Sox back in Cleveland that are I was at the game in God, what year was it? 99, maybe. I can't remember. Pedro came in relief in a playoff game and threw 6 like perfect relief innings.
Sounds
and like I was it. At that game and it was like that whole game. It was like, we've got this. We're going to come back. Oh, they're bringing out Pedro on like short rest. And he was just, oh, God. It was maybe the most impressive pitching performance I've ever seen. Like, it was just like at some point when they brought him out, it was like, okay, maybe we're going to get like a 90% of Pedro experience here. And that'll be just enough that we can scratch out a run or two.
Sure.
And instead, like within an inning or two, you were like, no, this is like 110% of what Pedro is capable of. This is insane.
They don't build him like that anymore.
No, that guy, man, he was fun to watch. Even again in that game, that was, I think it was a game 5 too of a division series. Like this was like a decisive game. I have to go back and double check all this. And I watched him just decimate my team and I still walked out being like, well, that was really cool. Like it was just incredible to see. Yeah. There are not a lot of pitchers who I'd be like, you just destroyed my team, but thank you for the privilege of watching it. Pedro is unique. So
absolutely.
All right. Well, we'll let you get ready for your miserable day. If no, I'm just kidding. For your what sounds like it'll be a good day. Hopefully Crawford pitches well for you. You gotta makes your decision easier, right? Go out there,
totally.
Throw a shutout with 11 Ks and be like, yep, Pete, you gotta hold on to me.
If that does happen, I'll lose a fantasy championship. So this is really a no-win situation, but we can end with that.
And of course, by the time anybody listens to this in a few days, they're going to be like, you thought Cutter was going to do that? Because they'll know what he's already done. So, yeah. Thank you all for listening, and we will be back with you next week.